We're beginning here on the top of Samach Hayamud Aleph, four lines down. The Gemara is discussing whether a katan has both the ability to liskot, to make a kinyan, be zocheh for himself, as well as does he have the ability to be mizakeh for other people, meaning that he's able to take possession of something on behalf of others or grant them a kinyan. And yesterday we saw a machloke between Rav Chista and Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Yassi. Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Yassi seemed to say that there was the ability for both zocheh la'atzmo as well as zocheh la'acherim, whereas Rav Chista believed, based on his interpretation of Shmuel's comment, that he's unable to have a schut or acquire something on behalf of another party. We saw that Rashi thinks that that machloket is a machloket derabanan, whereas the Balei HaTosafot think that's a machloket deoraita. So now the Gemara is going to bring an additional item to prove this and says, Meitiv Rav Avya, Ma'arimim al Masir Sheni. We can do a little bit of backhanded action here, a little bit of trickery to get around the problem of Masir Sheni. Ketzad, how do we do this? Omer Adam Livno Ubito Agdolim. Person says to his children who are of age, Labdo V'shivchato HaIvrim, or his Eved Ivri, or Ama Ivriya. Again, here in the Mishnah, we're looking for the same thing we looked for yesterday, which is people with independent ownership of the individual. So his children were of age, the Ama Ivriya and the Eved Ivri, all have the ability to have independent ownership. So he says to them, Halachem Ma'ot Halalu, take this money, Ufadu Bahen Ma'aser Sheni Zeh, and with this, redeem the Ma'aser Sheni. So what he's trying to accomplish here is avoid the additional penalty of one-fifth that is demanded of an individual who redeems his own Ma'aser Sheni. Ma'aser Sheni, which is taken off after the Ma'aser Rishon, in the first, second, and fourth, fifth years of the Shemitah cycle, that Ma'aser Sheni needs to be taken up to Yerushalayim and eaten within the walls of Yerushalayim. If the distance is too far, he's allowed to redeem the fruits onto money, take those monies up to Yerushalayim, and expend those monies on items that are approved inside of Yerushalayim. When he does such a redemption, if it is the owner himself that does the redemption, the Torah says he has to be Mosif Chomesh. He has to add on an additional fifth. If it's a third party that's redeeming it, then he doesn't have to add on a chomesh. So over here, what he's trying to do is avoid the additional chomesh that he would have to pay. If he redeemed it himself, then he'd have to pay another chomesh. So he could get anybody to do this. Of course, he's using his family members or his Eved Ivri or Ama Ivriya because they are, quote-unquote, loyal to him. They're not going to walk off with it. They're not going to do anything untoward. So he wants to use them in order to redeem it for the simplicity as well as the safety of the issue, he wants to redeem it with them. So now he gives them the money and they redeem it on his behalf. Chazal, we're okay with this happening is because we're going to see later in the Gemara that we're here, we're talking about Ma'aser Sheni, which is not deoraita, and Ma'aser Sheni, which in all likelihood would not be eaten in Yerushalayim. Hashivcha Echidami. This Ama Ivriya that we're speaking about here, what is exactly the situation? Ida'atya Betzarot. If she already has reached the age of puberty, my bayi gabe. What is she doing in his household? One of the items that releases an Ama Ivriya is if she comes of age, she reaches puberty. So she's certainly not of age, otherwise she wouldn't be there anymore. Elav du'ache betzarot. She doesn't, has not reached the age of puberty, and still she's able to hear, act on behalf of the owner. So now, the proof from this is not entirely clear, because in this case, we're not asking her to be zocheh on behalf of any other party. We're simply asking them to take the money from the Baal and then redeem the Ma'aser Sheni. The only thing they have to do is acquire the money. They have to be able to zocheh in the money. Then the money is theirs. And then they can redeem the Ma'aser Sheni. So there's never a zocheh and liskot. So it's not clear here why necessarily this is a proof to the question at hand, which is whether they have the ability to acquire on behalf of someone else or grant is chut to someone else. What some Rishonim suggest is that, as Rashi points out here, Mishalehem Shalohem Chozrim Vinotnim Lo, is that once they've redeemed it, they give it back to the owner. And the fact that they're able to give it back to the owner, or that it automatically goes back to the owner, that in and of itself is a proof that not only can they be Zocheh for themselves, but they can be Mizakeh, they can be Zocheh for others and grant the Kinyan to the owner. So that's how Rashi learns it. Others learn it that maybe it's just coming to show that you can be zocheh. Maybe that's enough evidence that if you can be zocheh, that shows that Shmuel's position may not necessarily be correct. But either way, it's not as strong as a proof as what we looked at in the Eruv yesterday. But here, Acha b'mayaskinon, b'maser b'zman hazeh, d'rabanan. Talking about Maiser b'zman hazeh, which is rabbinic in nature. Mar says, that's not so simple. B'amai v'riya b'zman hazeh, mi'ika. How could you have it be b'zman hazeh, where there is no Maiser sheni? There's also no amai v'riya. V'atanya, we have a braita. Ein eved ivri noheg, el b'zman sho yovel noheg. An eved ivri is not applicable unless the yovel is extant. Because it says in the Yovel, Ish al mishpachto v'ish el achuzato tashuvu. Just like the property goes back to its original owners, so too the individuals who are Eved Ivrim go back to their original families. So the Hekesh is between the movement of land and the freedom of the individuals or the movement of the people. When the lands return to their original owners, then so too does the Eved Ivri go back to his original owner, or the institution of Eved Ivri only exists when the Yovel works, where we're moving property back to its original owner. So if you're Bizman Hazeh, no Yovel. No Yovel, no Eved Ivri or Amai Ivriya. If that's the case, then it might work to make it in Derabonim in terms of Maiser Sheni, but you won't have an Amai Ivriya anymore. So then the Mishnah is not relevant anymore because the Mishnah is talking about an Amai Ivriya. Ella Batzitz Sheinu Nakuv Derabanan. Talking about an atzitz that didn't have a hole in it, a planter that is in the ground without a hole in it, which only has a chiyuv tshumot masrot mi derabanan. So even in the time where tshumot masrot are deoraita, you can come up with instances of tshumot and masrot that are derabanan. The truth is, the easiest way to go would have to say that it was tshumat peirot or tshumat yerek, which are both institutions derabanan, even in the time when Chuman Masera Doraita, Mina Torah, only Dagan, Tirosh, and Yitzhar are required to have Chumot and Masro taken off of them, Mina Torah, which is grains, grapes, wine, olives, and olive oil. Those only things that have a requirement, Midoraita. Chumat Perot, according to most Rishonim, is only Midorabanan, and Chumat Yerek, for sure, according to everyone, is Dirabanan. Reason that the Gemara probably didn't go in that direction is based on what we concluded with the Gemara yesterday, which is, the Tikkun Rabbanon came to Oraita Tikkun. Whenever the Rabbanon instituted something, they tried to take an existing paradigm and use that paradigm so that the Chiddush of what they did is reduced. In the case of Shumat Peirot and Shumat Yerek, those definitely were instituted came to Oraita. When you're talking about an Atzich Sheinu Nakuv, that's really an institution, the Rabbanon, which is completely new because it's not growing in the ground. And despite the fact that it's not growing in the ground, we're going to tell you to take off Shumot Masrot Mid Rabbanon. So that's probably why the Gemara favored that, because there you would not say that it has to be Kain Oraita, and that would allow us over here this dispensation which says that we allow him to use his Ama Ivriya over here, even though she's a minor, in order to redeem it, because we're only talking about something Derabanan. And therefore the Rabbonon were Mekil over here because of this Din Derabonon to say that he can be Marim, that he can redeem it without adding on the fifth, because it's a burden that doesn't benefit Hekdesh, doesn't benefit Shamayim, it's simply more food that he has to eat inside of Yerushalayim. And so therefore expanding the value of the redemption does not have a lot of benefit, especially when you're dealing with the Din Derabonan. Therefore they allowed a looser control here that you can use an Amma Ivriyarek Tana in order to execute on this redemption. Over here, Tosafot also points out that the Gemara could have had a simpler answer, which is that Ein Amai V'Yab Bizman Hazeh says Achanami Avi Matzi the Mifrach Ibizman Hazeh. If it's today, Lama Lo Laharim. Why does he have to cheat at all? Halo Yachol Lechalel Shava Meneh Ashave Pruta V'Chumsha. This is based on a Gemara in Bava Metzia, Gemara in Kiddushin, which is that when it comes to the redemption of Hekdesh or the redemption of these items, that even if the value is not equivalent, the money that you're using is not the real value of what you're trying to redeem, the redemption goes through. So, l'chatchila, we're not going to let you redeem things in that manner, which is that you are discounting the value of the item and saying, oh, I have a pruta, I'm going to put all of that onto a pruta. even though it works, b'diavad, if you did it, it works. But l'chadchila, we won't let you do it. Nevertheless, the Gemara tells us that today, where the money is going to go the ibud anyway, you're not going to do anything with the ma'ot ma'isu sheni. If you redeem it for its true value, all you're going to do with the money is going to throw it out in the end. The money is going to go to waste because you're not going to eat it up in Yerushalayim, or in cases of Hekdesh, you're not going to bring it to the Mikdash. So because of that, we give a dispensation, and that's the way it's done today, that when we redeem Ma'aser Sheni, we don't redeem the Ma'aser Sheni at its true value, we redeem it at a pruta's worth. So that way, we use this vehicle that even when the values are not equivalent, you can redeem it. So we allow you that dispensation, which is only really allowed to be used b'diavad. Here we let you use it the chatchila, because b'zman hazeh, it's all going to go to waste. You're not going to eat it anyway. So Tosafot says the Gemara could have asked that question. Not only is there a question about there's no ama avriya, but today you wouldn't even need to do the redemption, because whether you add a pruta or a pruta and a fifth, it's not going to really matter. The amount is so minimal that adding the extra fifth is not going to make the difference in the redemption of the Ma'aser Sheni. So Tosafot says that's another reason why we can't be talking about b'zman hazeh. That's why the Gemara goes back to suggesting it's not the Zman Hazeh, it's the Zman Shad Yovel Noheg. And we have it be a Din Derabonon because of the fact that it's an Atzitz, Sheinu Nakuf. All right, now, we have a statement here by Rova. Omer Rova, which is a conclusive statement about what we've been discussing now, which is the threshold by which Katan and Ktana get certain rights or have the ability to interact in certain halakhic levels. So Omer Rova, Gimel midot b'katan. There are three thresholds when it comes to a katan. Tzror v'zorko, it goes v'notlo. This is a determination that we saw yesterday. If he picks up a rock and throws it away, a nut, and he keeps it, meaning that he's discerning enough to know the difference between a nut and a rock, then at that point, he has the right zochel atzmo ben zochel acherim. He's able to acquire for himself, but he's not able to be zocheh for others. Now that was what we saw yesterday in the statement of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav Asi, that they said that this was the first level of discernment, and once they reach that discernment, they're able to acquire. Ukenegdan biktana, and the equivalent with a girl, mitkadeshet lemiyun. She can have kiddushin dirabanan, lemiyun, that will require a dissolution of the marriage through miyun. Because a marriage derabanan does not require a get. It only requires miyun when we're talking about a ktana, which is her rejection or annulment of the marriage. So the way that Rashi explains it over here is, any tinoket that can't take care of a kiddushin doesn't need miyun because she can't get married. So it has to be a ktana of the age where she can take care of her kiddushin. And since she can take care of her kiddushin, therefore she can be married. She can be married midrabanan. And since she can be married midrabanan, the dissolution of that marriage requires a rabbinic dissolution, which is miyun. If her father marries her off, then she is married midoraita. So that's not what we're talking about, that case, because when her father marries her off, she's married off midoraita. That can be done because her father can act as the agent on her behalf. Then it doesn't necessarily matter about her age. The problem is when her father has passed away, and now she's only going to get married midrabanan. At that case, what is the age by which she can get married midrabanan? And where she obviously would require miyun. She only require miyun if she can get married. That level or that age is when she can be, according to Rashi, shomeret kiddusheha. She can take care of her kesef kiddushin. And that is this threshold that we just spoke about. Hapi utot, which we saw back in the Mishnah earlier, mechan mekach umemkaran memkar bimitaltulin. When it comes to the youngsters, their transactions are transactions, meaning they can both buy and sell. And that is, as we saw in the Gemara, from kibar sheit, kibar shav, kibar tamne. So there the Gemara gave a number of possibilities, basically ranging from 6 to 10 in that age, and that was all the fi churfei. Has to do with the intelligence as well as the acumen of the child as to whether they are at the age of 6 or a later age, they come around this corner where they're able to transact. It really depends on their maturity. We're trying to give you objective standards here. The objective standards run in a range, and we acknowledge that. So we're trying to give you a bounds or a range, but there is a test for this. And here's the test so that we know. Uchanegdan biktana mitgareshet bikdushei avia. And then the equivalent by ektana is that she can divorce from her father's marriage. Remember that if her father marries her off, she's married mi d'oraita. So in order to dissolve a marriage d'oraita, you need a get. And as we saw in yesterday's daf, you can only get a get if she's able to be shomer gita. She's able to take care of her get. That only happens when, as Rashi says yesterday, if you send her away, she doesn't come back to the house. Vishilcha, but you send her away mi beito, and then she doesn't return to the house. That threshold is the same as the pi'utot, which is a older age than the age of kiddushin, according to Rashi. Kiddushim derabanan and miyun derabanan start at the age where she's discerning between a rock and an egos. Already when the pi'utot, when we get to the age where there is the ability to do more. Yesterday we saw some thresholds about the ability to discern between her get and davar acher, her ability to understand or discern between knowing that she's holding on to a get versus that she's holding on to something else or watching something else. She understands that difference. She doesn't have to understand what's in the get. Many of the Rishonim point out because even a Gdola may not know what's in her get. Just because you are more mature doesn't mean she has to understand the implications of the get, which is that when she's thrown out of this house, she goes back to her parents, she doesn't come back here. So what Rashi explains over here is that Kenegda Magdam, Mishachav Eino Chozeret, Karinin Ba, Umitgareshet Bekabalat Atzma. She can accept her own get here, even if her father accepted kiddushin, which means that it's kiddushin deoraita. So this is the ability to dissolve a marriage deoraita. So Rashi says the dissolution of a marriage midrabanan is the first threshold. Dissolution of a marriage deoraita is the second threshold. Just so you know that this is Rashi's girsa in the Gemara. There were others that had the girsa flipped, which is the ability to accept kiddushin is the later one here for herself. And the ability to divorce was the earlier threshold. So they have it just the opposite. Higiu leonat nidarim v'nidrehem neder v'ekdesham hekdesh. Here's the third threshold, is when they reach onat nidarim. Onat nidarim is 1 year before they come of age. It means for a boy it's the age of 12, for the girl it's the age of 11. That is what we call a mufla hasamuch le'ish. Someone who is able to articulate nidarim, understands what they are doing. Their nidarim and their hekdesh take effect because we assume, after testing them, that they understand what they did, the implications of what they did, and therefore nidarim, in the year before the person becomes of age, are tofes, they stick. Now, whether that's only midarabanan, midoraita is a machloket, but either way, the onat nidarim opens up this possibility before they come of age where they could obligate themselves in something. Uchanegdam biktana choletzet. And the equivalent with a girl is that she's able to perform chalitza at that age. That is a very difficult statement because we know that the requirement by chalitza is that of ish, that a person has to be of age. Both the man and the woman who are performing chalitza, both need to be of age in order for the chalitza to be effective. Over here, you just said that the year before they come of age, whether nidarim or nidarim, so there the chalitza goes into effect. How is that possible? She's not of age. So Rashi says, "Imi vias simanim lo amrina an shumaninu." Rashi says something that is extremely controversial and is rejected by almost all the Rishonim. Because Rashi says, if she reaches puberty in the year prior to her coming of age, that means that if a girl reached puberty between the ages of 11 and 12, and the same would be true seemingly for a boy between the ages of 12 and 13, we would not view the growing of the pubic hair as being something that is just birthmark, an unusual item. We consider that to be maturity. And therefore, she would be deemed to be of age. So even though it's prior to the age of 12, since she's hit puberty, she would deem to be a fully mature adult, and she can perform chalitza. That's what Rashi says. Tosafot brings the questions that all the Rishonim ask, which is, that's just not true. Because Rava himself is posek in other places. Only once you hit the age of maturity, does it matter that you have reached the age of puberty? You cannot become an adult prior to the time or the age of being an adult. And here Rashi is suggesting otherwise. So Tosafot over here brings numerous interpretations. He says, first of all, Umifaresh Rabbeinu Shmuel, the Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, explains, what he is saying over here is connectan biktana is not connectan of the girl, but connectan of the boy. For a boy, the onat nidarim is from 12 to 13. Connectan biktana would be 12 years old for a girl, which would make her of age at that time. And therefore, that's what he explains here, that she does chalitza when she reaches the age of 12. It's a nice solution, but as Tosafot says, doesn't fit into the language so well. Because if you look at all the other items, Uchenegdan is that we take an age, a determining threshold, and then we apply it that this is when something happens in terms of marriage for the Iktana. So over here, if you take that by Nidarim for a girl, Nidarim would start at 11, and that's what it sounds like is the transference over here to say Chalitza starts at the age of 11, not at the age of 12, but at least he overcomes the problem that Rashi has is how do you have someone doing Chalitza at the age of 11? Rashi says they reach puberty. Tosafot says that doesn't work, and therefore it must be saying that she's the same age as the 12-year-old who's mataken nidarim, the boy, that girl can perform chalitza because she's ready of age. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam, another grandson of Rashi, the younger brother of the Rashbam, says that he doesn't think that's correct, but rather it's aliba de Rabbi Yossi ka'amar Rava Hochi. The Rabbi here is saying it according to the shita of Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi who believes that chalitza can be done even prior to coming of age. And therefore, this is the shita Rabbi Yossi, that from Dibre Yossi Nimad, the Tanah Chuletzet Bipu'utot. So now, why would he do that? Because what it says is, V'ad Anakad Rava the Miltik Rabbi Yossi, they laso klau shalo. Rava did this to keep his whole institution in place. Which is, Rava over here says there are three times strata in terms of thresholds. So I gave you one, two, three. And each one of them, he gives you something that is halakhically important in terms of transacting. And another one that's important inside the world of Gerushin and Kiddushin. So in order to have three thresholds, where each threshold has both of those, he took up the position of Rabbi Yossi in order to make it that when the girl reaches the age of 11, there's something significant within marriage, that Chalitza works. But not necessarily that he's passing that way, not necessarily that he agrees with that, but he wanted to give you these three strata and have something to say in each one of them. That's the Rabbeinu Tam's explanation. The third possibility about how to explain it, which probably is likely the most likely explanation here is, Be'od Yeshlemar, Da Gersinan Rabo. That over here, the Gersa is not Rova, but rather Rabo. Meaning that the principles that are established over here seem to be against positions of Rova other places in Shas, like the next line that we're going to see in 1 second. So therefore, if you change the Gersa to Rabo, then you may not have a problem, because it's only Rova who we know says for sure that before the coming of age, puberty means nothing. So therefore, Rava would be a stira, a way that Rashi's explaining it, and that's why it would fail. But if you say that Rabo is the author of the positions over here, then it's much easier to explain a lot of these things, because again, Rava is the one who disagrees with that position of Rabbi Yossi as well over there, and therefore, you would straighten all this out by changing the girsa to Rabo instead of Rava. So those are four ways to deal with the issue of Chalitza. Rashi's way, which is to say that is puberty in the year before they come of age. Rashbam's reasoning, which says that it's the boy's 12 is getting transferred to the girl being a 12, which means she's of age. Rabbeinu Tam, who suggests that this is the shita Rabbi Yossi, who says chalitza is even before you come of age. And the last possibility, which is that it's Rabo, is the author of these positions, and that would take away a lot of these stirot that are coming up, which are in the name of Rabo. And then the last thing is, v'limkor minichse aviv adshe ben esrim. In order to transact in his father's property, he has to be 20 years old. So this is something that we discussed earlier, and we discussed the pu'utot mechan mekach. Tosafot over there raised this issue of 20 years old, and there he gave three different thresholds in time in terms of transacting, which is the pu'utot are able to transact with metautalim. Once they become 13, they're able to transact in karka, in land, but in transacting in land that is land of Yerusha, which is the karka beit avot, or possibly land that came through inheritance rather than land that they acquired through their own business dealings, over there they have to wait till the age of 20. As the way the Rambam formulates it is that when you reach the age of 20, then a person has reached nitziyashvat dato, a person has settled down, he's reached a certain level of maturity by which he can make decisions that are proper decisions. He's more worldly by the time he reaches the age of 20. And that age is an age that is used as a threshold, not only here, but in other items as well. The Rambam brings that as the age to get married. 20 is the age where a person goes from being able to delay getting married to the point where he should not delay it anymore when she reaches the age of 20, because he's reached the age of maturity, and it's time for him to mekayim the mitzvah pru'urvu. So the Rambam uses this age of 20 here and in other places to define a certain level of maturity. It's adulthood, not simply going to the age of 13 or 12, where the individual becomes of age, but adulthood in the sense of maturity and worldliness that gives him the ability to act and transact in a manner that is well thought out and well considered. And that's what this age of 20 is over here. That obviously means that it is somewhat movable depending on the times and the social structure of society. In their day, 20 was the threshold. Maybe even the time of the Rambam, it was still 20 was the threshold. But in today's world, 20 is not necessarily the threshold when children haven't even reached in Israel university, or in other countries where they're just in university, maybe the time is a little later than the 20-year-old that's mentioned here. Next Mishnah. Tana Shamra Hitkabel Li Giti. A Tana who says to a Shliach, accept the get on my behalf. Enu get ad shigia get li yada. The get is not a get until it reaches her hand. Fikach im ratza ba lachzor yachzor. Therefore, if the husband wants to back out of sending the get, he can. This we saw in the Gemara because she'en katano says Shliach. A katan is not able to generate shlichut. Since they can't generate shlichut, they also can't make a shliach lekabalah. So then when the individual gives it to them, why does it work? Why does the baal work? So we said in the Gemara, because the husband knows that a katan or katana cannot create a shliach, and therefore he flips the shliach to be a shliach leholacha instead of being a shliach lekabalah. When he makes it into a shliach leholacha, then he can back out of it until it reaches the girl. And then number two is, it doesn't go effective until it reaches the girl, because it's a shliach leholacha. So it's no longer a shliach lekabalah, but rather a shliach leholacha. V'mamar lo avia, say, v'hitkabel lebiti gita. If the father says to the shliach, go out and accept the get on behalf of my daughter, imratza lachzor lo yachzor. Then the husband, when he gives the get, cannot retract the get, because the father does have the ability to generate a shliach lekabalah. And therefore, the shliach is a shliach lekabalah. And as soon as the get goes from the husband's hand to the shliach lekabalah, the divorce is effective immediately. That's why you can't back out. It's done as soon as the shliach lekabalah receives the get. And that's because her father can accept on behalf of his daughter. What exactly the case is, again, we spoke about this yesterday, the machloka between Rashi and the other Rishonim, where it's obvious that the father can accept on behalf of his daughter while she is a ktana. Whether the girl herself can accept it had to do with the thresholds that we spoke about. In the case where she's not of age where she can accept the get, then Rashi says no one can accept the get. Most of the other Rishonim, including the Tosafot that we saw yesterday, say that the father can still accept it on her behalf. So the cases here where she's accepting the get are cases where the father is not around, the case where she's already of age where she can accept a get, and then the case where the father can accept the get is either while she's still a ktana, and she could have accepted herself, but her father also has rights. According to the other Rishonim, even when she cannot accept the get, the father could have someone accept the get. That's the case here. Omer, ten get zeli ishti b'makom ploni. He says, give this get to my wife in such and such location. V'netanola b'makom acher. And they gave it to her somewhere else. Pasul, the get does not work. Because the husband is makpid on the location. Whether that's because in that location, he will be less embarrassed. The people will not make fun of him or give him a hard time about it. Or whether that's because in that location, it'll be more difficult on the woman. It'll embarrass the woman more. For whatever reason, he makes that a condition of the get that it be done in such and such location. If the shliach does not follow through on that, he has terminated his agency and the get is pasul. Harihi b'makom ploni. On the other hand, if he says, give this get and she is found in such and such a location, then, unetanola b'makom acher, and he gave it to her in another location, kasher. There the get is fine because he was what's called mare makom. He's trying to just tell the shliach where to find her. He's not saying, I want the get given here. He's just saying, please give a get to my wife, and she is in such and such a location. He's not telling you that it must be done in that location. He's just telling the shliach where you're going to find her in order to give her the get. In that case, if the shliach finds her someone else and gives the get, that's fine. The get is a good get. If a woman says to a shliach lekabalah, please accept the get in such and such a location. V'kiblu la b'makom acher, and the shliach accepted it somewhere else. Pasul, it's no good, because here the woman is indicating a certain preference for the fact that her get be accepted in this location. For the same reason the husband might want it in a specific location, she also wants it in a specific location. And if the shliach violates that, then he has abrogated his agency, and he's no longer a shliach, and therefore the get is pasul. Rabbi Eliezer Machshir. Rabbi Eliezer says it's fine. The reason being, the husband has control over giving the get. The woman is not in control of giving the get. The woman can just accept the get. And therefore, she doesn't have sufficient control over here to make a demand as to where the get is accepted. Because she can't force the husband to give her a get in a certain location. And so therefore, by definition, when she indicates a location, it's always a mari makom, according to Rabbi Eliezer, because the woman doesn't have sufficient control to define the location or the acceptance of the get. She can't dictate the terms of the get, and therefore Rabbi Eliezer believes that always it's a mari makom for the woman. She says, bring me my get from such and such a location, and they bring it to her from somewhere else. Kasher. That is kasher, because again there, it's more along the lines of mari makom, even according to the chachamim, because she just, go bring me my get from such and such a location. She's just telling the shliach where to go find it. But if he finds it somewhere else, that's fine. She didn't define the location where she wants it accepted. She simply said, that's where it is. And because of that, it becomes like a mari makom. Ve'Rabbi Eliezer, maishna reisha dolo palik, maishna seifa did palik. Why does Rabbi Eliezer have a differentiated opinion only in the case of the woman, but not by the man? How come by the man he can define the location and it does posel the get, but the woman can't? Iu demidate migaresh kopid. He who is the initiator of the divorce and is the one who grants the divorce only of his own volition, he can be makpid on the location. Ihi debal korcha migareshet. She who can be divorced, even against her will, meaning that it's not her determination, she's unable to exercise any rights over here, she simply can receive the get, mare makom hilo. Therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says it's always a mare makom, because she doesn't have sufficient control to dictate those terms. All right, next to Mishnah. Haveli giti, if she says to the shliach, bring me back my get, which means that she made the shliach a shliach leholacha, ochele bitchuma ad sheyagia get liyada. Then, she can eat the truma if she's married to a kohen. She continue to eat truma until the get reaches her because she's not divorced until the get reaches her hands. Hitkabel ligiti, if she sends out the shliach to be mikabel the get, meaning a shliach the kabbalah, asura lechol b'truma miyad. Immediately she can't eat truma because we don't know when the shliach is going to bump into the baal, whoever the baal sent. And once the get's given, it happens immediately. So we don't know when, how immediately that's going to be. And so because of that, the get is deemed to be effective immediately, and she can not eat truma anymore. Hitzkaveli giti b'makom ploni. If she sends the shliach to be a shliach the kabbalah, but in a very specific location, ochele b'truma ad sheyagia get l'oto makom. She can eat truma till the amount of time it takes for someone to travel to that location. Since according to the chachamim, when she dictates the terms of where the get is received, if the shliach accepts the get in that location, it's a good get. If he doesn't, it's not a good get. So the get will only be good if he receives it in that location. So the minimum time it takes for the shliach to get from here to that location, she can still eat truma because the get will not be a get before he reaches that location. And for that reason, she can eat until that point in time. Rabbi Eliezer osir miyad. Rabbi Eliezer the shitato says it's asur miyad because wherever the get happens, it happens. For Rabbi Eliezer, everything is a shliach the kabbalah anywhere because you can never dictate terms of where it's going to be. So from the moment that the shliach leaves the house, if he bumps into the baal, then he can take the get and it's a get right away according to Rabbi Eliezer. Mar says, v'gita miahavi, and her get is still a good get. V'amare et reisha lo havi gita. Didn't you say in it's the previous Mishnah here, but in the reisha of the Mishnah, that it doesn't work. According to the Chachamim, when the woman defines a location and says, I only want a shliach the kabbalah in this location, it works. And if the shliach does not accept it there, it abrogates the agency and the get is pasul. That's what we said in the first Mishnah. In this Mishnah, we say that if she sends out an individual to go to makom ploni, it says, ochele b'truma ad sheyagia get l'oto makom, that until the get reaches that location, she can eat truma. The assumption of the Gemara is that the shliach bumped into the Baal, then he walks the get from wherever he got it to that location, and then it goes effective in that location. How does that work? How can you do that? Because if the get is pasul, how does it walking into that location make it kasher? She only appointed the individual to be a shliach of Kabbalah in that location, not to accept the get somewhere else and then take it to that location. So why is the get kasher here in the latter Mishnah? It says, Lo tzricha, the Amrole, the instruction she gave to him was, Hitkaveli gita b'mata machzia, v'zimnin de mishkacha levi bavel. She says, go pick up the get in Mata Machzia. Mata Machzia is a small city, probably a little larger than a village. At some points in time, the yeshivot of Bavel were found in Mata Machzia. And she sends the individual there to go pick up the get in Mata Machzia. But she says, sometimes is in Bavel. This is what's meant by that statement. Mishko kohecha de mishkacha le shakla mine. Wherever you find him, take the get from him in that point. Gita lohavi adamati to matamaxia. The get is not effective until it reaches matamaxia. So in her instructions, the way that she's making him into a shliach to Kabbalah is, listen, I want you to be a shliach to Kabbalah. Get me the get in matamaxia. But there are times where you're going to find him outside of matamaxia. So in her saying that, if you can find him sometimes out of matamaxia, she still demands that the get only go effective when he reaches matamaxia. But she accepts the fact that he might receive the get somewhere else or outside of Matamaxia. And that's why it works in the second Mishnah, that the get is kasher and not pasul, like in the first Mishnah. Tosafot over here already raises a serious issue with this, which is, how does this work? The shliach, the Kabbalah, and you have the husband sending the get. Now, if they meet outside of Matamaxia, the shliach, the Kabbalah, if he accepts the get at that point in time, the woman is not divorced because the get's not effective until you go to matamaxia. But then that means that you have a case or a situation in which the husband's already given up the get to the shliach, but the get does not reach, quote-unquote, the woman until she goes back to matamaxia. That means in the interim, this shliach is carrying a get, and he's a third party. That means that the get does not go directly from the husband to the wife, or from the husband's agent to the wife's agent. Because over here, what happens is, the get is given to the agent. The agent now has the get. It's left the husband's hand. And it only becomes effective, or the woman's only receiving it, once it goes to matamaxia. That space, or time, or interim stage between when he receives the get and goes to matamaxia, whose agency is he doing? Legalistically, how does this function? So Tosafot over here suggests, at first, the possibility that the husband turns him into a shliach l'holacha. Knowing that that's the condition, the husband turns the shliach into a shliach l'holacha, and he takes it from wherever they find it to matamaxia, and then he flips to be a shliach l'kabbalah, the woman's shliach l'kabbalah. The problem with that is what we discussed already earlier yesterday and earlier in the Masechta is, a shliach is only a good shliach if he can go back and report on his shlichut. If he flips from a shliach l'holacha to a shliach l'kabbalah, then it doesn't work. That's one possibility Rotosavot throws out there, that that's how it's working. But he says it's very problematic because if this same shliach is the shliach l'holacha and the shliach l'kabbalah, it doesn't really work because when the husband shliach l'holacha terminates, he turns into a shliach l'kabbalah. And at that point, it's not the shliach l'holacha was not really a shliach l'holacha because he can't report back to the Baal that he did what he was supposed to do. The other possibility that Rishonim raised here is that he creates either another shliach l'holacha to take it there, and then to go with the shliach to Kabbalah, or the other way around, he makes him a shliach l'holacha to give it to someone else there, who will give it to the woman. You can come up with all these permutations. The second solution that the Tosafot brings is the solution preferred by the majority of the Rishonim, which is inami, mi bavel ad matamaxia havi kol shliach to Kabbalah. He is a shliach to Kabbalah in that entire stage. Havi komer li'isha arizeh gitech lotit kashibo ad achar lamed yom. It's equivalent of putting an embedded tnai into the get, where there's a delay in the effectiveness of the get, which you can do. You're allowed to do that. You can hand a get to a woman and say the get only goes effective in 30 days from now. So now what are you going to say? That it left the husband's hand, it didn't go to the hand of the woman because it's not effective immediately? No. All we say is that it went from the husband to the wife with a condition that delays the effectiveness until 30 days later. And so Tosafot says the same thing here. The shliach the Kabbalah, when he receives it, the woman has received the get. Only thing that is now embedded in it is there's a condition that it won't go effective until he goes to matamaxia. And that delay in effectiveness does not change the fact that the get went from the husband to the woman directly. It simply is a condition. The condition is, now take the get to such and such location, and when you get there, it will go effective. And that's the same as saying that the get will be effective 30 days later. That doesn't change the fact that it's going directly from the husband to the wife, so too over here. All right, so here, Tosafot shifts it from a delay in the receipt of the get to a delay in the effectiveness of the get. And that's the difference between a tnai and shlichut, agency that takes it from one location to the other. And that's how Tosafot solves the problem. Rabbi Eliezer, usir miyad. Eliezer says it's usir miyad. Pshita. Da'amarakamakomilo. I mean that Rabbi Eliezer's the shita does, we noted. Because Rabbi Eliezer believes that defining of a location for receipt by the woman is not meaningful. It's always just an indication of where they are, not the defined place where they could pick it up. Lotricha. Damarle zil de mizrach. Dite be mizrach. Because of the marov. She says, go to the east, because he's in the east. And the shteya goes the opposite direction and starts heading out to the west. Maudutema, what I would thought, bimarav halete, that in the west, since he's not there, she continue eat truma until this guy returns to the east. Kamash malan, the dilma bahade de gazel, migas gaisbe, that he bumps into him, vayayivle gita, and then he gets the get. So even though it seems that the shliach is going in the opposite direction of where the husband is, nevertheless, the woman has to stop eating truma immediately, because there's a possibility that the shliach, even in going out the wrong direction, might bump into the baal as he's heading out. And as he's heading out, if he bumps into the baal, the get will be effective immediately. So the woman has to assume it's immediate, even though the shliach seems to be going in the opposite direction, and it's going to take him more time to get the get. Homer lishlucho, person who says to his agent, arev li bitmarim, v'irev lo bigrogurot. He says, go put out an erev tchumin. Erev tchumim is the ability for a person to extend the radius, the distance they're allowed to walk on Shabbat. They're entitled to 2,000 amot in every direction on Shabbat. If an individual wants to go 4,000 amot in a single direction, then they have the ability to establish their residence 2,000 amot in the direction they want to go. And that will reset their center of residency for Shabbat instead of where they are actually located to the place where they set up the meal. But what they have to do is they have to set up a meal in that location. So what he does is he sends out an agent to set up the meal over there, and he tells him, use dates to set up the meal. Instead of using dates, the shliach used figs to set it up. Begrugrot, or he has been set up with figs, v'irev lo b'tmarim, and then he did it with dates. Tani chada iruvo iruv. We have one brayta that says that's a good eruv. Tanidach ein iruvo iruv. And we have another brayta that says that it's not an eruv. Amarabo lo kasho. Rabbi says, that's not a problem. Ha Rabbonon ha Rabbi Eliezer. So that's the machlok between the Rabbonon and Rabbi Eliezer as to whether someone is makpid. Ha Rabbonon damrei kepedo. The Rabbonon would say that the person is makpid, like here where the woman is makpedet, on the fact that the get be accepted in this specific location. So over there, but she's makpedet in that location, we say that if he doesn't do it that way, it's no good. So it's over here, if the owner said do it with dates, and he does it with figs, or vice versa, he didn't listen to the owner, and therefore his agency is terminated. Ha Rabbi Eliezer, damar mare makomilo. And that is Rabbi Eliezer who says that it is a mare makom. Because any time that the woman is giving identification of location, it's not saying must be in this location, it's telling you please find it in that location, you probably will find him in this location. And so over here, you could say the same thing, which is, but he says, Tamarim in Gugurot, he's trying to tell you, you should do it. Or here, it's here, take these dates and do it. But if he does it with something else, he's not so makbid about that. It's only makbid that the Eruv get set up. All the Rishonim ask your question. Cases aren't comparable. How can you compare these two cases? One case is a case where there are reasons to be makbid. In the other case, maybe there are no reasons to be makbid. And Rashi already, to fend off the problem, says, Bare mokum hulo, b'mida deleka pseida, b'lo ichbatlei. Rashi adds something into Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, which is that in cases where there's no loss, people don't care about it. And since they don't care about it, then they're not makpid, it becomes the equivalent of a mare mokum. So Rashi, without saying so, is answering the question and saying, how are these cases comparable? Rabbi Eliezer over there says it's a mare mokum because the woman doesn't have a right to determine the location of the get. She can't be makpid because she doesn't have the ability to be makpedet. Whereas over here, the Baal does have a right to be makpid and he can exert that hakpada. So then why, according to Rabbi Eliezer, is it still considered to be a mare makom? Rashi answers that question by saying that Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is, where it doesn't make a difference, we always assume it's a mari mokum. So in the case of the get, she can't make a difference with it, therefore it's a mari mokum. Over here, it doesn't make a difference, not because he can't make that decision, but because it's irrelevant. If there's no loss of money here, there's nothing that affects him here. Since there's no loss of money, it's irrelevant, and since it's irrelevant, then it's as if there is no hakpada. As Rashi notes over here also, l'rabanan, even though the woman doesn't have inner power to make the determination as to where the location is, still we deem her instruction to the agent to be a hakpada. So to over here, we're going to call it a hakpada, even though seemingly there is no nafkamina, or it shouldn't matter. Nevertheless, once a person appoints an agent, the Chachamim say, that agency is governed by the restrictions that she places on it, even though she's not in control of the situation. And so to over here, even though seemingly it should make no difference to the Baal, whether it is Gugurot or Tamarim, nevertheless, if he's Makpid and he sets up the Shlichut in that way, it'll be a Hakbada by the Rabbanan. That's how Rashi seemingly addresses this issue. The way that the Rashba simply states it is that we know there's a difference between the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer with regards to Hakpada. May not be that these cases are identical to the case in the Mishnah, but we could draw a distinction between their positions in Hakpada, and we can then take that and apply it over here in the case, even though the case is not identical to the case over there. All right, now the Gemara then says, Rav Yosef argues on Rabban and says, Hava Rabbonon. Both of them are the Rabbonon. Kan b'shelo, kan b'shel chaviro. It depends on whose fruit he's using to set up the Eruv. The way that Rashi reads this over here, V'inu nami lo amar kpeda ela gabi isha. They also only said that the kpeda is by the woman. Dehatam nechalat shetitzel v'lo b'dukta achrina. Because she prefers that it be this location and nowhere else, because either they're friendly to her there, she's okay being embarrassed there, for whatever reason, she has akpada that be in that location. So that's why over there, it's particular that the Chachamim require hakpada. But over here, there's not necessarily always going to be hakpada. Hakpada is determined by how important the issue is, which is the one that says that Eruv o Eruv is when he's using his own fruits. When he's using his own fruits, why does it make a difference if he used dates or figs? Dates or figs are equally good to make the Eruv, and either one of them will suffice, and they cost the same amount. So what's the difference? He can use dates, figs, doesn't really matter. Rashi says, but in the case where it's his friend gave him permission to use his dates. He didn't give him permission to use his figs. So if he uses the dates, he is marviach. He makes money, quote unquote, because he saves having to put something out because he can use his friend's dates. On the other hand, if he uses the figs, he doesn't have permission to use the figs. That he'll have to pay for. If he has to pay for it, then he's lost money. And there there'll be akbada. That's the way Rashi learns it. Tosafot says that he doesn't think that that's what Rav Yosef is saying. It doesn't seem like Rav Yosef is arguing on the previous part of the sugya. He's accepting what the Gemara said until now. And therefore he says, Had shalo v'hal shel chaviro in the following manner, which is, Achei nirah l'fareish, d'shalo avi kepeda. When it's own stuff, then he's makbid. V'shel chaviro, d'avi b'shel shliach, b'chol ma shiyotze ha-shliach, hirav lo, kevin d'mari av lo b'perutav. That the shalom over here is when you use his fruit, then he can be makpid on what it is. He said, I want dates. I like dates. That's why I wanted you to put dates. You put figs, it's no good. But he sends the shliach, and the shliach's going to do it with his own fruits, then he's just thankful that the shliach does it. Doesn't matter what the shliach does it with. It's either with dates or figs. The shliach's doing it. So there he's not going to be makpid because someone else is doing him a favor, taking care of it. Over there he's not going to be makpid. And that's the way Tosfot explains the difference here between Shiloh and Shel Chaveiro. Amar Le Abayi, so Abayi says to Rav Yosef, Abayi is a Talmid, both of Rav Yosef and Rabba, says back to Rav Yosef, Elohad de Tanya, what are you going to do with this Braita? Omer Lushlucho, Arev Libi Migdal, Virvileo Beshovech. If he tells him to make the Eruv in a Migdal, in some sort of tower, house, Virvileo Beshovech, instead he put the Eruv by a dovecoat, Beshovech, he tells him put it by the dovecoat, instead he puts it in the Migdal. The Tanya Chada, Eruvo Eruv. We have one bright that says that the Eruv is still a good Eruv. Tanidach, Ein Eruvo Eruv. And then another one says that the Eruv is not a good Eruv. Over there, Shalom and Shel Chaviro are not relevant because the locations are the definitions of where he wants it or what the bright that they're speaking about are simply locations. They are not materials to be used, but locations. And assuming, as Tosafot says here, that these are near each other, that the Shovach and the Migdal are near each other, it's not an indication that's one here and one there, which he could be Makpid on because they're in different locations, because then it could have just said Migdal and Migdal. Migdal in place A, Migdal in place B. The fact that it's switched between Migdal and Shovach, that seems to indicate that that's the only difference between them. So then, my Shalom Shechavro Ika, over there, what type of Shalom Shechavro is there that he could be Makpid on? It says, Hatam Nami Ika Peri, the Migdal Peri, the Shovach. Then that the fruits that are in the Migdal and the fruits that are in the Shovach. That's the difference over there. Not that we're talking about the location itself, but there are fruits located in those places. And therefore, you could have Shiloh and Shel Chaveiro, meaning that the fruits belong to him in one location. They belong to his friend in another location. And he's saying, go take the fruits from such and such a location that belong to so-and-so, or take my fruits from such and such a location. Over there, you could differentiate between Shiloh and Shel Chaveiro. Right now, next Mishnah. Omer titvu get, utznu liishti. He says, write a get and give it to my wife. Garshuha, kitvu igeret, utznu la. Hare elu yichdavu viitnu. In all these languages, those are a language of get. And since they're a language of get, they will follow through on his instructions. And if he says to write it and give it, in all those cases, we will do as he says. Now Rashi points out over here that all of these lashonot are lashonot of get, which is lashon b'nei adam hu. This is the colloquial way of saying these items. Kvar ziku bo likrot the sefer kritot isha get, because it has become commonplace, or the word get is synonymous with a get p'turin, a bill of divorce, because the word get by itself means a contract. So when he says kitvu get utznu, today it's so ingrained in us that a get means a divorce, that we all say, oh yeah, the Mishnah said get, that should be a divorce. But it's not true. The word get means contract. If they write a contract and give it to my wife, what Rashi is pointing out is that the colloquial usage of the word get has become so associated with the bill of divorce that when you say write that contract, the contract there, get, the word get is synonymous with divorce, and that's why you're allowed to use it. Also, in terms of Gerushin, they say Garshua. Gerushin is also a terminology that is used for divorce. And Igeret is also a term that is used because of the language that is found in the get. V'dan d'havi laichim inai sefer tiruchin v'igeret shivukim. That this should be a book of separation and a letter of sending away. The word igeret is embedded inside of the lashon haget, and that's why if you say kitvu igeret v'tznula, that igeret is synonymous with a get. And we're going to see that more and so in the Gemara when we come up with other languages, that Rashi's indication is that whenever the language is a language that's used in the get or associated with the get, then it works. When it's not, then it doesn't work. And that's what the Mishnah says now. If he says pachua, parnesua, Asula kinimus, asala kiraoi lo amar klum. In all those cases, he said nothing. He says patrua. Patrua comes from the word patur, to exonerate, to dismiss, and therefore dilma lashon patur v'chova la'akel me'alei chovot shechayavt. Maybe he's saying you should reduce the obligations that she has over here. He's not necessarily saying liftor, like the modern word is used, to fire someone, to relieve them of their position. The word patur can come in two ways. It can be patur in the sense of someone who does not have to pay, is not obligated to pay. Or it can be liftor in the sense of dismissal. And so the problem is that when he uses that lashon, we don't know which one he is saying. And therefore, we do not assume that it is associated with a divorce. The same with the language of parnasua. As Rashi points out here, kol lashon parnasa, lashon asiyat tzeracheahi. It means to do what the person needs. So therefore, we don't know when he says parnasua means pay her out her tuba and give her her livelihood, or parnasua means take care of her needs. And so again there, since it's ambiguous, we won't assume that that instruction means give a get. Kinimus, Rashi says, kechok, give her what she deserves. Does that mean give her a get, because that's what she deserves? Or give her what she deserves means her ksut and mazon and all the things that the husband is obligated to her. And the same kiraoi. Do what she deserves. Does what she deserve mean deserves a get? Or deserve means what she deserves, what she's entitled to from the marriage. And so because of that, those languages are too ambiguous. And since they're too ambiguous, we won't assume that he instructed you to give a get, and you can't carry through with them. The language that were used earlier are almost exclusively used with regards to a get, and therefore if he gives those instructions, you can write the get, even though he didn't say get isha, get turin, but he used languages that are the colloquial way of expressing a divorce. Tan Rabbanan, shalchua, shavkua, tarchua, harielu yichtivu v'yitnu. And all of these languages work, again, as Rashi noted before, because those are languages that are found in the get. Shalchua is what is said in the Torah, v'shulcha mi beito, and he sends her away. The case of shavkua, as we said before, is igeret shibukim. It's a letter of sending away. And tarchua, as we said before, it's a sefer teruchin, which is a sefer gerushin. So all of these are languages that are found in the get, and are synonymous with get isha. And for that reason, they all indicate a divorce. Then you follow through the instructions, you write them and give them. Patruha, parnasua, asula kenimus, asula kiraoi, lo amar klum. So similar to the second half of our Mishnah. Tanya, Rabbi Natan Omer, patrua divarav kayamim, pitrua lo amar klum. So Rabbi Natan distinguishes between the language that is used between patruha and pitrua. So Rashi here brings a girsa that is the opposite, which is Rabbi Natan Omer pitrua divarav kayamim, lashon get piturin, because that's associated with get piturin, and that's why he says it works. Kach shamati, that's what I heard from my rebbeim. Veli nira hafuch. On the other hand, he says, I think just the opposite. Patrua, which is the girsa that we have in our Gemara, which usually happens, is our girsa follows the girsa of Rashi. And Rashi says the girsa here should be patrua works. Because that's a lashon tzivui. Patrua, dismiss her. Kamo shalchua, send her away. Kamo dabru, shivru, or basru. All of these things are commands or lashon tzivui. Patrua, dismiss her. Halashon get piturim shu dagesh. Because it is an emphasized word of patrua. Pitrua, shiloshon tzavahu rafi. It is a weaker form of command. It's a looser word. It is more along the lines of release someone from their obligations, but not to dismiss them. It's a lighter form of dismissal. So what Rashi says is the patrua is the active tzivoy verb, and that means dismiss her, get rid of her, give her a get. Other than pitrua is the more passive form of the verb, the more passive form of the command, and that passive form means release them from their obligations, not to actively dismiss them. For that reason, Rashi sees the difference between the language being pitrua is a divorce, and pitrua is not a divorce. Whereas the Rebbeim of Rashi and many other Rishonim view it just the opposite, and they say that pitrua is a lashon tzivui, the active form of the verb, and patrua is lashon avar, is a past tense verb, and therefore it has no meaning here whatsoever. And that's the difference. Pitrua is the tzivoy to actively divorce her. Patrua means that she is released or she was released, which has no meaning in this context. And that's the way that the other girsa that Rashi brings would explain the difference over here. Now you have a stira between Rabbi Natan and the Mishnah. Amarova, Rabbi Natan de Bavlohu. Rinatan, who's from Bavel, Vidayik ben Pitrua, the Patrua, he differentiates between Pitrua and Patrua. Tana Didon, our author of our Mishnah, as well as the Braita, Dibar Eretz Yisrael, who? They are from Eretz Yisrael, where they only speak Hebrew. Lo Dayik, it's not Midayik. So it actually turns out to be a very strange thing, because it would make more sense to say that the people in Eretz Yisrael are more Miduyak in their grammar, because they are speakers of Hebrew. And therefore, they would make the distinction. Yet, Rava is saying just the opposite, that Rabbi Natan is the one who is more Miduyak and makes that distinction, whereas the Tana only speaks Hebrew, doesn't make that distinction. And that derives from the fact that, seemingly, and this is what Rashi seems to say as well, is one is a Hebrew and one is Aramaic. The diuk here is not in within the Hebrew language itself or the grammar of the Hebrew language, rather a difference between whether the verb is an Aramaic verb or a Hebrew verb. So someone who speaks both Aramaic and Hebrew will make that distinction. And that's what Rabbi Natan does. He makes a distinction between Patrua and Pitrua, which Rashi indicates Patrua is a Lashon Tzivui in Aramaic. And that's why Patrua, Rashi claims, is the active verb to dismiss or to get rid of the woman. On the other hand, pitrua is the Hebrew verb, which simply means to release the person from an obligation, not necessarily to send them away. And that's a distinction that Rabbi Natan is making, that the Aramaic verb is different than the Hebrew word, and the pronunciation matters, because when you pronounce it in one way, it's the Aramaic, when you pronounce it the other way, it's the Hebrew. Whereas the Tana, our Tana, who's in Eretz Yisrael, only knows Hebrew. And in Hebrew, there's only one word, and that's patrua, and patrua doesn't do anything in Hebrew. And since he only speaks Hebrew, the Tana there, he's not associating the language used here with the language of the get, of get piturin, which is a language or an Aramaic language that is associated with the get, because he doesn't think in Aramaic at all. So it doesn't matter which way you formulate the word, neither of those words is automatically associated with get, because piturin is a translation of the Hebrew of shiluach. But it's only relevant if you speak Aramaic. If you don't speak Aramaic, patur only has one meaning for you, which means the releasing from an obligation. Now you can see that in Lashon of Rashi, in Bavel, Shemesaprim, Pamim Lashon Arami, Pamim Lashon Ivri. They flip between Hebrew and Aramaic. Yukach Yamar Pachua, Lashon Get, Piturim, Hu. Shehidgish, Siper, Lashon Arami. Because he went out of his way to say it in Aramaic, he's obviously referencing the Lashon of the Get. Remember, Rashi keeps pointing out that the verbs that are used here are considered to be for Gerushin when they are connected to the language that is used in the get. V'chi amar pitrua, siper b'lashon ivri, v'mashamar l'shon patur v'chova. Then when he uses pitrua, then he's using Hebrew, and that has no association with the language of the get, and therefore it means patur, like the opposite of obligated, she's no longer obligated. But it's not a lashon of Gerushin, and that's the way that Rashi explains it and others explain it in order to avoid this problem of it being somewhat strange that the speakers of Hebrew know less about Hebrew than the people in Bavel. Ibailuhu. Now Gemara wants to know. Hotzi uha mahu. Azvuha mahu. Hetirua mahu. Henichua mahu. Hoila mahu. Asula kedat mahu. All of these languages where he says, send her out, leave her, free her, let her be, take care of her, do to her what is appropriate. All these languages, are those considered to be languages of Gitin? Or are they not being Gitin? As Rashi points out, all of these languages have some association with the get, which is, Hotziua is Viyatsami Beito, that when she sends her away, he'll leave the house. Or, maybe that's not the case, Viyatsami Beito is not a command, but a result that when he divorces her, she will leave his house. And therefore, that's not considered to be a divorce. Azvua, which is again from Igeret Shivukim, or maybe because Azvua is the translation of the word, Shivuk is the Aramaic form, but if you don't use the Aramaic form, just translating it to Hebrew is not sufficient. Or Hitirua, which is also Hariat Muteret Dechol Adam, which is part of the Lashon Haget. Or yeah, muteret is a lashon, as she says, by hatarat nedarim or hatarat chagura, where you use the language to release someone from a neder, to open up their belt, meaning that the lashon is not exclusively used or associated with the get. So Gemara says, pashut miochado. Let us at least answer one of these questions, which is the Tanya. Asula kedat, asula kenimus, asula keraoi, lo amar klum. So that the asula kedat is similar to the language of Asula Kenimus and Kiraoi that's in our Mishnah, and therefore it's not assumed to be a Lashon of Gitin. And if he uses that language, you do not write and give the get, because it's not a language that's exclusively or understood to be speaking about a get. Okay, we'll stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Samachay Amud Bet.